Okay, now we can take questions, I think, for any of our speakers. So do you have questions for any of our speakers? Oh, yes. Jen, Tim Smeeding.
Thank you, Jen. I was really quite intrigued by Dan's presentation. And Dan, can you save enough money and energy to pay the healthcare bills that we're all going to have to pay in the future? I mean, this is serious business. That industry is not turning around. That industry is going to grow as the population ages, including many of my colleagues like me. There's going to be huge demands. But can you save enough in, I mean, this would be a great selling point if you could.
So I don't think anybody knows. My wife is a physician, and so I tread softly in this territory. The places that have been exploring that issue that I am aware of have been doing it from a little different angle. We talked mainly today about the job training, the workforce aspects, but Oregon, Minnesota to a lesser degree, and California that have all been talking about these transfers of funds have all been doing it in the climate context. So those three states are all looking at versions of carbon cap and trade or cap and something else bills to raise money. And this was highlighted in the federal budget last year when, somewhat controversially, President Obama's budget included a great deal of revenue from a non-existent, not then and not now, cap and trade system that would go into other areas. California, we just submitted our report to the governor. It was a unanimously approved bipartisan report, 8 Democrats, 8 Republicans. I served on that panel. And in the California case, we chose to recommend a market for greenhouse gas emissions, but to put that money back in two forms. Most of the money would go as a dividend to individual Californians, not on the income tax, but a straight check being sent back to them individually, with about a quarter of the money over 15 years held for state programs, for which the state government would then choose which of it went into energy efficiency, healthcare, education. In the California case, education and healthcare were both targeted to receive a portion of that. So those are the cases that I am familiar with. And you know, it depends how you think this process will go overall in terms of where the monies go, I think, is the safest answer. But again, we're now trying to cross-fertilize between two complicated sectors individually when you start to look at that.
Thank you. Other questions? We can have questions now for any of our speakers. Any questions? Yes, right here. Jen?
On the green jobs, you talked about the multiplication factor of jobs in the infrastructure, largely related to the buildup of equipment and what would be necessary. How does that work on the back end as far as potential job differentiation on coal production? Is there a loss of jobs, or is it assumed that third world developing will keep those industries going?
Right. So, tough question. In the sense that it depends on which of the scenarios you look at. In almost every state's version of this, the coal sector takes the biggest hit. And whether it takes a large and permanent hit or whether it is a retraining depends on which version. North Dakota, for example, is looking at a version of this that would utilize the fact that many of the utilities that are current coal users also are very well positioned to do wind. And so in some cases, it's transition. And the big unknown in this is, will the process of burying carbon, so-called carbon capture and sequestration, will that become a big industry that allows coal to go forward as clean coal, or will it not? Opinions are very strongly divided on this process. Carbon capture is something that we know technically works, but it is not clear whether it will emerge as an industry soon enough or will be cost effective. So it will be coal transforms, or as we're hearing in a number of places, the long-term forecast for coal is grim. So even in China, they are talking about a many-decade process to ramp down the amount of coal. Now, they 60 to 70% of their economy is powered by coal, so it's even more than ours. But what happens to coal in many of the US state versions is the coal sector is the one that takes the biggest job hit.
Question here, Jen. Representative Hilgenberg.
Just want to touch on long-term, short-term, and the difficulty, and I'm sure frustration on the part of a lot of people that long-term politically becomes November, and the difficulty with that prospect, and also just the debate on short-term investment for long-term job creation, to have to address creating new jobs in a new sector, but creating short-term costs that impact existing industries and cost job loss. So we're talking about short-term increases in energy costs, for example, risking job loss in existing industries, and offer as the benefit is new job creation. Any discussion or ideas on how we can address that from job creation point of view without turning it into a political discussion for the most part?
So let me take a shot, but yours are also on it as well. I mean, so the biggest feature that we see in this is that in a number of states that have done assessments, Pennsylvania, Oregon, California, the bulk but not all of the studies in each of those three states estimate that the job gains, even in the short term, outweigh the or larger than some of the sectoral dislocations. And that, in fact, I gave the Colorado example where utility rates actually fell. And Xcel Energy, that's also active in this area, was, in fact, the largest. It was in their service territory where this took place. So 5 years ago, there was much more balanced literature on whether you're going to get only short-term increases in costs and job loss. Now it's much more divided. In fact, the states that have pushed ahead in this sort of integrated from R&D to deployment are seeing larger growth. The other feature, before I turn it over, is that the states that have taken this on earliest have seen the largest new infusion of venture capital money in these areas. And so from retrofitting warehouses to engaging in programs that train people right away, Pennsylvania and California have very high-profile programs to train people coming out of prison, to do inner-city deployment of energy efficiency from new ducting, heating, et cetera. And it's been a major economic and political selling point in these areas. The last piece is that Native American communities have found this to be an incredibly large potential revenue source because a number of reservations have large amounts of area that are potentially very attractive for wind, for solar, and other development. And so it's been a very big, so Montana now is a very large program to work with the Crow Nation in this area. So there's a whole range of features. But this really speaks more to this integrated strategy approach that you mentioned.
Well, you're right. It's very hard to, in across the board, making short-term investments for long-term gains, and people's planning horizons are short, especially in political communities. So how can we make the case? And there is, part of the problem is also there's a lot of uncertainty. The longer term the return is, there's more uncertainty about what that market's going to look like. We don't know if we're going to pass cap and trade or not in the United States, or when it would happen. Right now, it actually looks pretty grim for the short term. Regardless of what one thinks of it. So there are these uncertainties. On the other hand, if you can point to the data, number one, the world market seems to be going in that direction, even if ours isn't. But if you can point to, either in the data or in people's recent experiences, things that suggest what that market's going to look like. Now, it wasn't that long ago that it was $4 a gallon for gas. And a couple of years ago, people had very, very high heating costs before, and there's a very good case we make that the world economy is going to recover from this downturn within a few years, and we're going to be back to high fossil fuel energy costs, regardless of what policy does. And I think if people can be reminded, and that's just one example, you know, and you can ask this question across the board, of course, but when you can point to not only in the data, but people's recent memories of examples that suggest these market forces are going to return, and therefore we ought to be thinking about it now. Maybe that strengthens the case a little bit politically.
Okay, well, we're going to have many opportunities for discussion in our... Did you have a quick question, Catherine?
I did have a question.
Okay. I'll give you about 30 seconds. We'll need a quick response.
I can ask you in 30 seconds.
Okay.
Given that there are several examples of states and countries who have really accelerated their market in the whole alternative energies arena, is there an inventory or an analysis that's been done about how they classify their workforce and how they look at what different certificates, post-secondary education programs, meet the needs of that workforce, both now and what they're projecting in the future for skills? And so where can we get it?
I can answer even more quickly, actually.
Okay.
Our laboratory was asked by the National Governors Association to do that report. And so in late 2008, we actually came out with an assessment that focused more on U.S. states and less on the European and Japanese experience, but it has some of each. So this is a report on the clean tech sector. It's on the National Governors Association website, also on the website of our laboratory, which is that R-A-E-L. Berkeley.edu.
It's in your briefing report.
And all the governors signed it. Actually, Governor Plenty is the one that introduced it. So I'd be happy to provide anyone the direct link to it if you want as well.
Good. Yes, here's in the first couple pages of the briefing report and also in the resource section, you can find the website for R-A-E-L.